The following is a presentation of Remnant. I am reaching from the depths of my soul. Hear me pleading. I'm a child, I'm a poor, I am needed. To the throne of your virtue, believing.
Hi, this is Jerry Godsey, co-pastor of Remnant. Remnant was begun with one goal, to touch people with God's incredible love. My prayer is that this study will comfort you, challenge you, and bring you one step closer to being the person God wants you to be. If this study is helpful or if you need more information, please drop me a line at jerry@remnantchurchonline.com. God bless you, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to a message from Pastor Jerry Godsey.
I like today's title, if for another reason that it makes you say, I don't know where he's going with this, and I'm kind of scared. There should be a certain element of danger in church, shouldn't there? Just, you know, a little bit. You're not sure what's going on. And we were looking at 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 13. One verse today. Just one verse for our text. And good verse. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 13 says, therefore, prepare your minds for action. Keep sober in spirit. Fix your hope completely on the grace to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. And really, we're just going to look at the first little bit there. Prepare your minds for action. Keep sober in spirit. Fix your hope completely on the grace to be brought to you. If you shop much at Christian bookstores, there's all kinds of self-help Christian books. There's all kinds of them. And they follow, you know, themes. And one year it's demons. There's like a million books on demonology. And one year it's on angels. And everybody's talking about angels. One year is the prayer of Jabez. You couldn't go anywhere in Christian circles without reading about the prayer of Jabez. Oh, it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. It had been in the Bible for, you know, how many hundreds of years, but there it was. And, you know, people are talking all about it and stuff. Let me tell you one book you'll very rarely find, and that's a book on holiness. Because we're afraid of that word as Christians. Now, whenever we think of holiness, and this is me, I grew up in church, you know, I'm my third generation preacher in my family. When I think of holiness, I think of a guy, and he's going to tell you about Jesus. You know, and you got to have that little extra on the end of each one of the words, you know, to make it really sound emphatic. And you got to have that special voice. You got to really let it go. And, you know, and he's going to tell you, I loved Frank. Frank, last week, I was rolling in it. And I wondered if you would make it out of the building alive after some of the stuff you said last week when he talked about. And by the way, I used your line about if the barn needs painting, paint it. I've used that two or three times this week, which I think is just hilarious. But you know, really, when you think of holiness, you think of those old preachers that we used to call them clothesline preachers. You know, ladies, you gotta wear long skirts, and men gotta wear a tie. Really? A tie? I don't see that in the Bible. I think God was sensible enough not to make us wear ties. I've told you many times, I tried to convince my grandfather one time, and my grandpa wore a tie to mow the lawn. And you think if I'm lying, I'm dying. Am I right? My good family members are like, yeah, it's true. He wore Florsheim dress shoes and mowed the lawn in them. Dude's hardcore. And he was never one of those clothesline preachers. That's just the way he felt a preacher ought to dress. And that's the way he dressed. He wore a dress shirt and slacks to go out puttering in his lawn. You know, working in his roses and stuff. Like, Grandpa, put on a pair of shorts and a t-shirt. What? It was like a foreign land to him. I bought him a pair of tennis shoes one time, and he never knew what to do with them. He could not imagine wearing them anywhere. All right, Grandpa. But we think about those clothesline preachers and how they preach about, you know, and you got to wear ties. Anyway, I tried to convince my grandpa the ties were worldly. But just think about it. Why do you wear a tie? You wear a tie because somebody says that to be dressed up, you have to wear a tie. If you're really serious, you'll wear a tie. Really? What good does a tie do? It has no purpose other than to catch soup. If you see me in a tie, I'm either going to a wedding, a funeral, or to testify in court. That's really the only three times I wear a tie. When I wear a tie at work, I'm walking out, oh, you got court? Yeah, I got court. That's how they know. That's how they know where I'm going that day. So we think about these guys, you know, and they're going to preach about ties, and they're going to preach about ladies' clothes. And I love the story of the lady that walked into church, and she was kind of inappropriately dressed for that church. And all the guys started to look at her. And the preacher said, don't look at her, you'll go blind. God will strike you blind. Some guy in the back said, I'll just risk one eye. So when we think of holiness, that's what we think of. We think of that old time, roast you like a hot dog over the fires of hell kind of preaching. And that's not what holiness is. Holiness is a subject that we as Christians need to talk about. Now, the whole idea of our sermon, I love the picture of our little frog there. The whole idea of Boiling Point, the whole series, again, is that if you put a frog in boiling water, he'll jump out. Because he'll say, ow, the water's hot, and he'll jump out. I don't know if he actually says ow, but he will jump out. But if you put a frog in water and then slowly raise the temperature, he'll stay there till he cooks. And how many of us, if somebody came at us with this obvious degrading sin, we'd say, oh, no. But slowly we have allowed our Christian life to become more and more like the world. To the point that our friends, the media, everything we hear around us, that's what's shaping our Christian lives, not what God says. Holiness, guys, is a chance for us to get back to what God says. Now, I think as Christians, most of us want to be holy. And we hear say, you know, I just want to be a rank sinner. Well, don't put your hand up, because this is probably not the place for that. You know, we want to be good. I think we want to be good. I had a kid, he was 5 years old when I was teaching at Faith Academy, and the kid was just bad. It's like demon seed, man. I'm just kidding. But I was teaching, but I was also in charge of discipline, and they brought this kid into me all the time. One day, he flooded the girls' bathroom and covered the floor with toilet paper. He was 5 years old. I'm like, what planet are you from? The planet Chaos or something. And I'm big guy, and I'm looking at him. I said, why can't you be good? And he looks at me, and Linda Pryor and Debbie Hamilton laughed at me, because here's this big guy, and this kid reduced me to mush. And he says, because my life is hard. Oh, buddy. He says, it's hard to be good, Mr. Godsey. You ever feel like that? It's hard to be good. Isn't it, though? Isn't it hard to be good? It's easy to be bad. Being bad comes easy. Let's be honest. Being bad, well, I'll just naturally default to that. That is the default setting. But to be good, to really be holy, that's a chore. And we think about it, it's like, no, because... and again, we got this idea that to be holy means that, you know, all of a sudden we're going to start wearing white shirts and little black ties. And we're going to have to carry a 25-pound family Bible wherever we go. No. Holiness, the word holy, just means set apart. In fact, you want to be holy? Be holy right now. Just tell God, God, I want you. I want to be set apart for you. When we think of holiness, though, in fact, Leviticus chapter 19, verse 2, I've often heard this almost like a threat, speaking to the entire assembly of Israel and say to them, be holy because I, the Lord your God, am holy. And we think of that as a threat. You better be holy. Like God telling us, you better be holy or I'll smack you a good one. Like God's going to lay hands on us and forget to pray. You know, we worry that that's what this is. But no, isn't this more like, hey, be holy. I'll help you. Find me one place in the Bible where God tells us to do something and then doesn't offer us the strength to do it. Find me one place in the Bible where God requires something of us and then doesn't follow it up by saying, I will give you the strength to do that. If God is telling us, be holy, you better believe he's going to help us be holy. That's the great thing about God. God is not there to trip you up. God is there to help you. Philippians chapter 1, verse 6 says, I'm confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion. Now, let's start at the very basics. You give your life to Christ. And if you're here this morning and you haven't accepted Christ as your Savior, here's how simple this is. Jesus, I accept you as my Savior. Wow. Deep theology there, huh? No, it's that simple. We try to make it all so much more. Well, you know, you have to get down your hands and you have to raise your hand. No. It's just God and you. And you saying, God, I want you. It's Sometimes we add things like, God, I want you because I've really messed my life up. God, I need you because my life is not what I want it to be. See, sometimes the situations in our life drive us to God. And make no mistake about it, God, let those situations go. If you go to hell, it's going to be because you've run through every roadblock God put in your way. And if your life's getting uncomfortable, your life's getting to the point where it's not quite what you think it ought to be, maybe that's God letting you just kind of reap a little bit and say, okay, you know what? Maybe I need to go to God. When an eagle makes their nest, a mother eagle makes her nest, she fills it full of down and all kinds of soft things. Then as the chicks grow, they hatch and they grow older, eventually it's time for them to fly, but hey, let's be honest, it's like a couch in there. Why leave? So the mom starts picking out all the down. And she makes it uncomfortable for the birds. In fact, she makes it so uncomfortable that it's better to fly than to stay in the nest. And there are times when God is going to let you get uncomfortable to drive you to Him. Amen? Why? Because He loves you. See, the mother eagle, she knows that the best thing for those eagles is to get out of the nest and fly. An eagle's an eagle, beautiful bird, but if it can't fly, it's no good. We've got to be something. So, what does it mean to be holy? Well, holiness kind of begins in your mind. It's a mindset that you're going to change things. And before you think that this is just psychobabble, look at Romans chapter 12, verse 1 and 2. It says, therefore, I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, His good, pleasing, and perfect will. Now, this, by the way, is where we get today's title, Don't Be Jell-O. Because when I read this verse, I think of Jell-O. I love Jell-O. Jell-O, it's sweet. My grandmother used to make Jell-O for me. Strawberry Jell-O with cut-up bananas, my favorite. Ooh. Now, the only kind of Jell-O I don't like is the kind where they put cottage cheese in it. I don't know what's wrong with you putting cottage cheese in Jell-O. Cottage cheese is foreign. It's a foreign object. It does not belong. It's not food, in my opinion. It didn't come from a cottage, and it's not cheese. I don't know what that is, but it's not. My children used to make cottage cheese when they were babies, okay? Oh, now you know where I'm coming from, okay? Now, the cool thing about Jell-O is it doesn't have its own shape. You mold it into little rings that look like saw blades or gears. I don't know what. So I found some other molds, maybe. Let's look at another one. Here's a Jell-O mold look like a brain. What is wrong with people? I don't know. More brains. I think these are popular at zombie parties. Okay, look at the next one. The United States. Who hasn't wanted to eat Montana? Rhode Island is good, but it's too small. Okay. Somebody actually made this. It's the Capitol as a Jell-O mold. I have no idea. Okay, let's go to the next one. All right, now here's why do you need to mold Jell-O like a fish? Really? I mean, think about it. Why? What is wrong with you? What do fish and Jell-O have in common? Nothing. I said this one time, and a lady in my church put a grape where the eye for the fish was. Now, that's just wrong. Because it looked like Jell-O. Jell-O's not supposed to stare at you. And so I've got a picture of some lady with go to the next one. Why? That's a Jell-O fish. They call it Swedish Jell-O. I don't know. Maybe there's real Swedish people in there. I don't know, but it's just nasty. Now, here's the thing. When I say don't be Jell-O, it's because a lot of us are like Jell-O. Jell-O is a liquid, and you pour it into whatever mold, brains, fish, whatever, and it takes on that shape. It's conformed to that shape. Now, how many of you are like Jell-O? When you're with your friends at school or at work, you talk a certain way, you act a certain way, you do certain things. Then you come to church, and, you know, you're holy now. For that whole hour and a half you're at Remnant, you got it on. And after that, you'll be back to being whatever you are. This whole idea of boiling point is the idea that we're not supposed to be conformed to the world. We're supposed to be transformed. Jesus wants to transform you. He wants to change, but it starts with the renewing of your mind. It starts with you changing the way you think about things. Let me tell you something. If you still look at your sin fondly, you still look back at your sin and you don't feel regret and sometimes revulsion over your sin, you're going back to it. Listen to me. If you don't feel regret over your sin, you'll go back to it. Because you haven't changed your mind. See, I know a lot of people that say they've given Jesus their heart, but they haven't given him their mind. They still think about the world the same way they always did. They still think about the things around them the same way they always did. They just think that because they went down and said, Jesus, forgive me, that now they're Christians and they can do whatever they want. It doesn't work that way. We're supposed to be changed by the renewing of our mind. We're supposed to change the way we think about things. And that's really what we're talking about today. Let me tell you something. If you have a spiritual walk and you're struggling, I can almost guarantee you part of it is because you haven't changed your mind. You haven't decided to become holy. You haven't decided to think about the things that you're supposed to be thinking about. So I'm going to give you three things you need to do today. First of all, is preparation. Verse 13 again. Therefore, prepare your minds for action. Now, the King James Version says to gird up the loins of your mind. All right. What the heck is that? All right, now, we don't have to worry about it much today because none of us guys are wearing skirts. I hope. Okay, I guess, you know what, no, we won't go there. Anyway, okay, so when you're wearing those long flowing robes, it's hard to run in those dudes. Because, you know, you get the, so I guess you're doing this kind of thing, okay? So what they would do is they would reach under. And you have to be limber to do this. And you have to take the back of your robe and you pull it up and you tuck it in your belt. Now it looks like you're wearing a big adult diaper. But you're ready to rock and roll. That was called girding your loins. So when first century Christians, when this was written, they said, gird up your loins. He said, oh yeah. And it meant to prepare yourself for action. Get ready. I watched a fight between two girls one time. And, you know, girls are just like, nah, 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 you know, yipping at each other. All of a sudden, one of them said, here, hold my stuff. Start taking off her earrings and stuff. Now it's serious. We're getting down to business now. It's about to get good. Right? She was preparing for action. Because you don't want that big hoop earring in your ear when you're in a fight. Because that's where I'm going, first thing. Right? I'm thinking. I know how to do this stuff. So here, hold my stuff. They start taking off their rings. Let's go. Prepare your mind for action. What's he talking about here? He's telling you, get your head together. Get ready for mental activity. Get ready because your mind has become a battleground. There are times when my worlds clash or come together. You know, I've got the pastor world and I've got the crime scene investigator world, and every now and then they run into each other. And that happened to me this week. I was asked to photograph this guy who'd been brought in for a crime, and he looks at me once the detective leaves the room. He says, are you a pastor? He said, are you a pastor? I said, yes, sir. And he starts bawling and talking to me about what he'd done. And so all of a sudden, it's almost like I got the two, you know, the angel and the devil, but this time it's the pastor guy and it's the law enforcement guy on both shoulders, you know. You got to pray with him. He needs Jesus. The other side's saying, yeah, but what he's saying is a confession, so you got to keep that in mind too. And so like, And thankfully my lieutenant sent the detective back in to go get him. Here, get Gatsy out of there. But he said, here's what he told me. He said, my life is worse now that I've tried to become a Christian. He said, my life is harder now. He said, when I was doing whatever I wanted, it didn't matter. And I looked at him and said, yeah, but the difference is now you have hope. And before you didn't have any. yes, it's going to get tough because the devil's going to protect, going to go after you. Why would he go after you before? You're doing whatever he wanted. Right? Why chase a cow when he's already in the barn? Now, gentlemen, that concept does not work with courting your wife. Okay, I've heard guys, well, I told you I love you once. If anything changes, I'll let you know. No, that doesn't work, knucklehead. Every day you're confronted by thousands of things that try and sway you one way or another. It's a used car ad or toothpaste commercial. Why do you use the toothpaste you use? Sometimes it's because it's cheap. Sometimes it's because that's what mom bought and it was on sale. Sometimes it's because you think you'll have whiter breath. When I was a kid, it was something about using Pepsodent. You'll wonder where the yellow went when you use Pepsodent. Now, I'm 52 years old. That's from when I was a kid, and I still remember it. Plop, flop, fizz, fizz, oh. Why do you remember that? That's not earth-shaking. There's the table, table of periodic elements and the Alka-Seltzer commercial, and they're on the same time. In fact, you could probably remember more of the Alka-Seltzer commercial than you can the periodic table of elements. Right? In fact, the only reason I know any of the elements is because we did it for the element series. That's the only reason I even knew any of them existed. Strontium? What the heck is strontium? I've heard of scrontium, but that's just like a skinny little guy. I don't know what anything else is. See, if the battleground is in our mind, we've got to change our mind. We've got to change the way we think about things. Years ago, when the computers were first going, computer programmers coined a term called GIGO. And if you've worked around computers in the length of time, you understand this. Garbage in, garbage out. If you put bad input into a computer, you get bad output. If, you know, because now we got spell check, so we're used to spell check. But spell check doesn't catch everything. Not everything. And it's funny because you'll read and you think, what are they saying there? Well, it's because they were so reliant on spell check, they didn't stop proofreading themselves. Spell check only catches misspelled words. It doesn't count words put in the wrong place or used incorrectly. Garbage in, garbage out. Look, if you put it in wrong, it's going to come out wrong. If you let your brain just be constantly bombarded by all of this bad stuff's going to come out. We've got to change the way we think about things. We've got to change the way our mind processes things. We've got to start looking at things the way God looks at. Holiness begins in your mind. Which brings us to the second point, and that's separation. First, Peter tells us to prepare your minds. Then he goes on to say, keep sober in spirit. Now, you hear the word sober, you think of a couple things. You think of a guy who's not drunk. He's sober. But it also means clear-headed. Peter's saying, if you're going to live a clear, you're going to live the right life, you've got to be clear-headed. Now, when a person becomes intoxicated, it goes in their brain. In fact, I don't know if you've ever watched like the drunk tests. Hopefully, you've never had one. But if you've ever watched them, they move their finger side to side. What they're looking for is called nystagmus. And as your mind gets, the drunker you are, the earlier it happens too. As your mind goes off to the edges, your eye starts to twitch. And you can't stop it. It doesn't matter how composed you think you are, it's a physical thing that happens to you. And so they're watching for that. There's horizontal horizontal and vertical. And there's other things too. We used to have a set of goggles that we used at the fair that used varying. Did you try them? Yeah. Made you a little drunker, a little drunker, a little drunker. And it was hilarious. It really was. We went to Calexico High School when I was in crime prevention for the sheriff's office. We went down to Vincent Memorial High School. And we showed. And we had a bunch of the jocks come in. And we threw them a ball. And they caught it and all the stuff. Then we put the drunk goggles on them. And we got them progressively drunker. And it was hilarious to watch them. And everybody's laughing. And I said, now I got a PowerPoint I want you to watch. And I bring up this PowerPoint of this girl who was a model. And got mad at her boyfriend, broke up, and drove drunk, and ended up in this horrific accident. Her face, and we actually showed the pictures of these kids. The first face, it looks like a lump of raw hamburger meat with a straw sticking out of it. And that was her. They thought she was dead until they heard her gasping. And they went on and they rebuilt her face. And her face, at its best, looks like a patchwork quilt. And she uses she tells her story that how she drove drunk and that's what happened. And here's the thing. The reason that happens is because when you're drunk, you're impaired. Your brain doesn't react as fast. And that's why it's dangerous to drive that way. It's dangerous to walk that way. Honest to goodness, I knew a guy that fell off of a bicycle and hit his head on a curb and it killed him. And it was because he was drunk. So he went from drunk driving to drunk riding, I guess, but dead is dead. So when we think of sober, that's what we think about. But what we're talking about here is to be clear-headed, to be prepared. If you're going to go buy a car, you have to be ready to walk away from the table. If the numbers don't come, in fact, my wife says I'm too quick. Because I'll say, well, I guess we can't do it then, and I guess we'll walk away. And that's like, you were kind of rude. Nope, just wasn't going to buy it. You have to be ready to walk away. But if you ever get to a place where you're buying a car and you say, oh, I have to have it, I don't care what it costs, you're intoxicated. You're intoxicated by the chrome or the Hemi. See, you're no longer clear-minded. You're blinded by that car. And what we're saying here is keep your head. Don't be controlled by your emotions. Look, we deal with people all the time who are just run by their emotions. They wake up in the morning and they don't feel Christian. What does that mean? I don't feel like a Christian today. I wake up in the morning and I don't feel like a human. Really, I mean, think about it. I used to have hair that would get disheveled, you know, and you wake up, it's going like a minute. Doesn't anymore. Now I just comb my hair with a washcloth, I'm good to go. But I wake up and I got bad breath. I, you know, peel wallpaper with my breath, you know, and my bones ache and I creak. And I mean, it sounds like somebody is popping popcorn when I walk down the hallway the first thing in the morning. And I don't even feel human, but I am. I mean, as human as I get. See, we run by our emotions so much. We make decisions based on our emotions. I don't like that person. Why? I don't know. I just don't like them. Well, at least you have a logical reason. I had a girl who was mad at me for, 10 years, maybe longer. And one day, Lynette asked her, why are you mad at him? She said, I don't know. I just know I'm mad. Well, that's just dumb. If you can't remember why you're mad, should you still be mad? Obviously, it was earth shaking and life changing. We get ruled by our emotions. And Peter's saying here, he said, hey, don't be ruled by your emotions. Be clear-headed. I know a lot about dieting. If you want to find anything about dieting, talk to a fat guy, because we know about dieting. I've lost millions of pounds over the 50 years of my life. I find them all again, but I've lost a bunch of them. I know about dieting. I also know that my biggest downfall is that when bad things happen, I want to go eat a cake. I don't eat some cake, I want to eat a cake. And a bag of Doritos. And a small Volkswagen. I mean, I really get hungry. Okay? I'm what's called an emotional eater. We just watched Stripes the other day, and John Candy says, yeah, I swallowed a lot of emotion, and a lot of pizzas, too. Okay, the same idea. So I know that when I get emotional, I don't need to head into the kitchen. I need to stop and think about it for a minute. Now, do I always? No. You can look at me and tell I haven't been that disciplined. We got to think clear-headed, guys. We can't be ruled by our emotions. And especially in the area of sin and temptation. We're so easily cut off by our emotions. We're so easily just heading off. And what they're saying here is keep sober in your spirit. Keep clear-headed. Let God keep your mind set on Him. Which brings us to the third place, and that's concentration. Oh, I wrote celebration. It should be concentration. Because evidently, I don't know how to type my own notes. Can you just pretend that spelled correctly? I don't know what I was writing there. A mind. All right, let's celebrate. Yay. Okay. Concentration. I don't know if you ever had a chance to watch, but I love watching our police dogs work. The dogs we have at the sheriff's office. It's really cool. They go around, and they'll bring them into a scene, and they start looking all around. And they're just going crazy. They are concentrating so much. And they're looking around, and they keep looking at their at the trainer. Huh? 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 Over here. You know? And they're looking around. They're looking around. They're so intent on what they're doing. And then they find it, and they sit down. If you're used to seeing those dogs on TV, they go crazy. Ours are what they call passive alert dogs. And so they'll find it, and they'll sit down. And as soon as they sit down, they're looking at the trainer. Huh? 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 It's right here. Check it out. I found dope. And the dogs are playing. To them, the dogs are playing. They don't know that it's serious business. To them, it's play. And our trainers carry a rolled-up towel or a piece of rubber hosing or something, and that's all that dog wants. He wants the affirmation of the master, and he wants that weird, they call it the baby. He wants the baby. Give me that thing. Oh, oh, oh. We have one dog, they have to choke him to get him to let go of the baby. That's enough, that's enough. Choke him. And the dog is holding on to it. And his eyes roll back in his head. Oh. You pull it up, it's all slimy and everything. I told one of our handlers, you have to touch that now? He goes, yeah, I'm used to it. Dude, get a rubber glove or something. Are you that focused on serving God? Are you that focused on pleasing the Master? Look at verse 13. Fix your hope completely on the grace to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Fix your hope completely. Concentrate on it. Check this out. Keep this first and foremost in your mind. This is what we're talking about, the grace, the gift of God. This is what we're talking about. This is what our life should be about. We get so busy running after all this other stuff that in the end, it doesn't mean anything anyway. What we should be living for, what we should be looking at, is the grace. The word translated grace there, by the way, means charis. It means kindness shown to one who's undeserving. Read it again. Fix your hope completely on the kindness that God's showing you, even though you don't deserve it. Wow. Does that open that verse up? Does that change the way you look at that now? What are we supposed to be paying attention to? The kindness that God has shown us. In fact, the word charis was used to describe the kindness of a master toward a slave. It was kindness that is not compelled. It can't be earned. It can only be given freely. Not because you have to, because you want to. Why does God give us grace? Why does God give us kindness? Not because He has to. Not because you've earned it. Because He loves you. And that's it. First and foremost, pure and simple, that's it. When you're sharing Jesus with people, a lot of times they tell you to ask the question, if you were to die tonight and show up at the gates of heaven, why would you tell God you need to get in? And I want you to think about that for a minute. If you were to die right now, and stood before the gates of heaven, why should you get in? See, and if your answer is because of the good things you've done, or the life that you lived, or the kindness you showed to other people, or because I was a good husband, father, mother, brother, whatever, because I go to church, because I'm a good person, you know what? All that tells me is that you don't understand the grace that God has. You don't earn your way into heaven. You don't. You can't. You can't earn your way in. You can't go to God and say, well, you know, God, I've been pretty good today. And God says, yeah, okay, and? Think about it. Are you going to impress God with your goodness? God who's never had an impure thought? God who's never done anything wrong? You're going to impress him with your goodness? Get a can of SpaghettiOs and go up to a famous French chef. Hey, check this out. SpaghettiOs. He's going to look at you like, go away. They won't feed SpaghettiOs to their dog. Now, personally, I like SpaghettiOs. Fold up a cool paper airplane and take it to the guys at NASA? Oh, check this out. They're like, go away. Leave me alone. We go to God and try and impress God with how good we are? God's like, dude, I wrote the book. It's not happening. When we stand before God, the only thing we have is his grace. Hey, God, I don't deserve to be here. But you sent your son to die for me. And that's why I can stand here. It's not because you helped a bunch of little ladies across the street. It's not because you lived this certain kind of life. It's because Jesus died on the cross for you. And you're forgiven. College professor once told his students, first day of class, he said, all right, I've given all of you an A. Now learn everything you can about this subject. That's grace. That's God. Isn't it? You know what God says? Hey, I've forgiven you. Now live for me. I've already paid the price for you to get into heaven. Now follow me. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 10 says, we've been made holy through the sacrifice of the body of Jesus Christ once for all. I said a little bit earlier that if you ask God to forgive you, that's it. You accept Christ as your Savior, that's it. That's it. Now, he's going to ask you to live a certain way. Because he knows that's what's best for you. He knows that's going to... See, that's where holiness starts in, isn't it? I once was this way, but now I'm going to change. God's going to help me, and I'm going to get better. I'm going to get better. I'm going to get better. And make no mistake about it, guys. You cannot stay a Christian. You cannot be a Christian and still live like the world. There's going to be a change. But I tell you, a couple of weeks ago, some wino walked up to you on the street, and you've seen this guy in Adams Park for all these years. He goes walking up, and he says, I found $1 million. You say, hey, whatever, dude. If you see him every day and he says, I found $1 million, but nothing changes, you're like, okay, you didn't find $1 million. You're a liar and you're probably drunk. But if the dude walks up to you next day and he drives up in a brand new Ferrari and is wearing a fancy suit and he's all shaven and clean and he doesn't smell like he used to smell, he says, I found $1 million, you'd say, can you adopt me? And where'd you find it? If you accept Christ, there's going to be a change and people are going to notice. And if they don't notice, you got some work to do. You got to change your mind. You got to get your head sober. And you got to follow him. You got to concentrate on him. That's the good thing. The good thing is that God offers us all of this because he loves us. And he wants us to do it. Why? Because he wants us to be successful. He wants us to be spiritually right. He wants us to succeed in him. That's good stuff. That's what we need. I am reaching
from the depths of my soul. You've been listening to a presentation of Remnant. For more information, visit us at remnantchurchonline.com.